Welcome to the Boca Lead Podcast. We hope you enjoy listening to this recording that was recently done at a gathering at Boca Raton Community Church. Visit BocaLead.com for more information.
Good afternoon and welcome. Who's here for the first time? Raise your hand. Wow, we are glad you're here. Welcome. We have a belief that South Florida in general and Boca Raton in particular is one of the greatest places to live and to work in all the world. That is a belief I have, not as a pastor, not as a business person, but as a family man and someone who's lived here. My family came here just after the turn of the 1900s. We've been here almost 100 years in this town, and we love this place, and we have a belief that we can make it a better place to live, to work, to play, to worship, to raise our kids. And Boca Lead is about helping raise the character and the ethics level of our business community. Over the years, Boca in particular has been given a bad name because there's a few groups of people that have had bad ethics. How many of you have hired a contractor or a realtor, my old industry, or something, and it didn't work the way you thought it should have, right? We all have had that. Well, we're here to raise that bar so when people think of Boca Raton, they think of a great place, not just to play, not just to go to the beach, not just to go to the great restaurants, but also to be a great place for a working environment so you can come, make a living, raise your kids, have a great place. And so that's what Boca Lead is about. It's about helping each other, working. There are people here who have a table filled with their competitors. Why? Because it's a great thing to have competitors who you can trust and work with. Some of you have your colleagues. Some of you have just friends within the industry. Some of you have your business associates. Whatever you do, we want to help you raise the bar of your ethics. We're not here to tell you how to run your business. We're not here to tell you how to run your industry. None of that. That's your job to do. We're just here to raise an environment in Boca. We love that the city of Boca is here and a lot of their officials, that the Chamber of Commerce is here and some of their trustees, because we want to work together with many organizations. And since I come out of the business world, before I was a pastor, I was a businessman for 25 years. I think business is a great place and a great platform in which to live your life and to advance and do things. And so that's what we're doing. And every week, once a month rather, every time we meet, I take a subject. Today's subject sounds a little odd, so you got to stay with me on this. There's a sheet in that little trifold in front of you. If you want to take it out, there's some pens there. You're welcome to take the pens afterwards as well. Just says Boca Lead on it. But the subject today is called Leading from the Second Chair. Leading from the Second Chair. Back almost 10 years ago, we had a recession, and in the recession, a lot of people had layoffs in their companies. When you think about it, who was laid off first in many of the companies? It was called middle management. Middle management. Why? Because they were seen as the least important in the business. And many people, I remember people would come and go, I'm in middle management, I don't know if I have a job next month. And I don't even know what middle management means, by the way. It's just kind of this innocuous name that is means you're not the leader and you're not the person down here. You're somewhere in the middle. I prefer to call it the second chair. Now, the second chair doesn't mean there's just one person above you and one person below you, but leading from where you sit. Not everybody sits in the first chair. And by the way, very few people sit in the first chair, because even I sit in the first chair in this organization. We have about 100 employees between the school and the church here. We've got, you know, multi-million dollar budgets. But guess what? I got a board of directors that I'm responsible to, right? You know, in a church, they call them elders. Some call them deacons. But they're a board of directors. So even I'm not in the first chair, ultimately. I think I'm in the first chair, but I'm really in a second chair. All of us sit in a chair. The question is, do you lead from that chair in which you sit? And I believe every single person can be a leader, no matter what chair they sit in. And the person who sits in a second chair, and we'll define what that means, I'll give some principles around it in a minute, is a person who influences people all around them. That means upstream, downstream, and parallel to them. So everyone in this room, it doesn't matter whether you're an intern or you just started work 3 years ago or you've been in business for 45 years, all of us have the opportunity to influence others, or you can choose not to influence people. Just do your job, just kind of sit in the corner and do what you're told and just do it. So that's the second chairperson who's not a leader. That's a middle manager. So let's talk about it. Now let me give you an example. I wear glasses. And I have to wear glasses because now you're all blurry. It's just one of those things. My glasses are special glasses. If you don't wear glasses, you don't understand this. But if you do wear glasses, you do understand it. These are actually three pair of glasses in one. They're called progressive glasses. On the top third is my long distance. I can now see everybody in this room very clearly, long distance. But also the bottom third is my close distance. They're a set of reading glasses. You know, the glasses you can buy at Barnes & Noble for 10 bucks. They're those glasses here. I do not have to put on a second pair of glasses when I open up my notebook, pull out a sheet of paper, some notes here. I can look at these notes and look at you and look at these notes and look at you and look at these notes and look at you, and it's all in focus. That could never happen before. Years ago, you had a set of glasses that saw when you drove and the long term, and then you would take these off and you'd put on a pair of reading glasses. And that is terribly distracting when you speak, because what I just did caused about 20% of you to now wander in your mind. Why? Because I speak at 100 words a minute and you listen at 500 words a minute. It's just a fact of life. I have to hold your attention with more than my words. Because if you're just listening to my words, you're going to get bored very quickly. So with me moving glasses on and off, it doesn't make sense. Now, my favorite doctor that I have, and I have a lot of great doctors, is my eye doctor, because she and I have worked it. I use the exact same font when I speak, and I know exactly how my arm is curved every time I speak. So I don't speak like this. If I'm holding notes, I have my arm curved. And she has made my glasses perfect so that I can see this and you simultaneously. So I don't have to go like this, nor do I have to. Have you ever seen people do this, right? So irritating. It's irritating, isn't it? It's just irritating to me. Hello, and then... How can this all be done? Because of the middle third. It's the middle third, which in my glasses are blank. I don't need anything there. Some people do, some people don't. I can see you guys very clearly without glasses. It's the rest of you. But it allows the transition between the distance and the close-up. Our minds work in nanoseconds. So that transition, and if I went from a pair of long-distance glasses to reading glasses without a transition, as slight as that transition is, I would be out of focus for a very short time. I would lose my train of thought, lose your train of thought, and speaking in front of people would be just disastrous. Only because of that middle third. You see, I look at leading from the second chair as the middle third of a pair of glasses. These are the people that can understand the big and they get the small. They understand the strategic, they get the tactical. They understand what's coming a year from now, they get what we got to do this afternoon. Those are the people that really transform a company. Let's talk about it. So look at your sheets. There are three paradoxes that come together while you're sitting in the second chair. But it's the paradox in every company. Let me give it to you. The first one is this, and it's right up here as well, and you got some things to fill up as well. It's the leader-subordinate paradox. There are people who are in charge. There are people they are in charge of. There are people who set the vision. There are people who fulfill the vision. There's the ones who are up here. There's the ones who are down here. And it's the whole paradox of who is in authority. Who's in authority in your business? Who's sitting in the corner office, so to speak, in your business? And that is something that all of us have to deal with. But the second chair person knows how to move between those authority lines and to have influence on people who are above them and those who are next to them or below them. And they can move along the lines of authority. We'll talk about that in a minute. The second paradox, and this is very important, is the deep, wide paradox. Some people think this way, and some people think this way. Some people, again, are looking for years out. You can think ahead. You can see the future. You're looking at all this. And there are others that look this way and go, wow, you know, and even with the fixing of this room, I said to the guys and ladies who did all this work, there was a lot of people who, I said, you know what, I want to move the front of this. If you've never been in here, the front of this room was over there up until yesterday, okay? That was the front, this was the back. So you walked into the front of the room. Well, that was when this was a dining room. Now it's a meeting room. So I had the big vision to say, let's move the orientation of this room. Big vision. I want people to be looking at me. Then when people have to come in late, nobody sees them. It's the way a room should be, right? Big vision. Okay. Well, then there were 25 people plus about 10 electricians and about 12 other contractors that had to come in and do the wide part, which was do all this work. I mean, they worked day and night for 3 weeks to make it happen. The coming together of the big vision with all the particular details is a person who sits in the second chair. They can kind of grab hold of what is being done. They may not create the big vision, but they grab hold of the big vision, and yet they grab hold of the details. They may not do all the details, but they kind of get a picture. You are the utility person. You're that shortstop. You're that, what was the catcher's name in the Cubs last night, Ross? What an amazing utility guy. He's overaged. He shouldn't be playing baseball. He's almost twice the age of those shortstops, right? 22 to 37. And yet he sparked that club to do things against some of the best pitching I have ever seen. I don't know if you're into baseball. I love baseball. Cleveland Indians, I have never seen pitching like that in my life. Those first three or four games, and he sparked that team. Not that he did. In fact, he blew it last night. Did you see the way he was catching? He was dropping the ball, right? He was running all over left and right, but he sparked that team into do something great. And then, yes, he did hit a home run too. So it was an amazing thing. That's a utility player, and a second chair person's a utility player. Number three, this is huge, the dreamer contentment paradox. There are people who dream dreams. I want to take this business to this point. And then there are people in business who just want to be contented. They want good health care. They want to work 9 to 5. They want to get home for their sons and daughters' ball games and ballet. They just want contentment as satisfaction. And some people want dreams as satisfaction. And you put those two people in a room, and it is like oil and water. It's fires occur. Have you ever seen that? People are dreaming dreams, and this guy says, I got to leave right now, you know? I got my daughter's ballet to get to this afternoon. The person in the second chair has got to bring those people together, and that is not easy. Sometimes leaders go, we want to be the best at such and such. And you guys do it. Well, there's got to be someone and some groups of people that bring them together and bring the dreams, and then the person who's just there to get a paycheck, but doing a good job. I'm not talking about sloughing off, but there are people that you just pay them what you pay them, and they're going to do the job, and when they're done, they're not going to think about that job until tomorrow morning when they come back. I mean, there are people, I can't imagine that. I live in this world. I cannot imagine someone not thinking of their job when they leave and drive out of the parking lot. I'm like, I wake up thinking about things, about this. But that's because I'm a dreamer and a vision, and there's others, someone's got to bring us all together. And it's really the second chair person who does that. It's you people. It's all of us that do that. Now let's talk about what it means. What's a definition? The definition of a second chair leader, it's right there. I put a couple blanks for you. It's a person. That's a man or a woman. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you are in the org chart. It's a person who is subordinate or in a subordinate role, meaning there is someone above you somewhere, whether it's a board of directors, the president, the divisional head, whatever, whose influence with others adds value. That means this person who is the subordinate has such influence with others that it adds value throughout the organization. In other words, you add more value than just the job you do. See, a middle manager just does what they're told. I got to manage these 20 people, these 15 people, these two assets, this property. I'm a property manager. I hate the word manager. I like leader. You are someone who brings value and adds value because of your influence. Now, let's bring this down and let's kind of dissect this a little. So let's look at the first one. What does a subordinate mean? That's a terrible word. I hate the word subordinate, but I don't want to use the word employee because some leaders are employees. You know, the divisional head here in Boca of your company is still an employee. So it's not employee. You both may be employees, not employer-employee, but you're a subordinate. It's a person who is not in the first chair. That means there's someone above you and has a direct report with that leader higher in the organization. All that means is there's someone that you report to. And I would venture to say that every one of us report to someone else. I got nonprofits here. I got several leads of non. You report to somebody. You report to a board of directors. You report to your donors. So everybody's reporting to somebody. And I would even venture to say you sole proprietors report to people. Some of you have your spouse funding your business. Your wife funds you, or your husband funds you, or your family is funding you. You have to report to them. You have reporting to do, so you are even in the second chair. So it's a subordinate. Number two. Oh, stop. Come back. Get rid of this. Sorry. Here's what I want to do. You tell me some qualities of this person. I have three here, which I'll do. You just think right now. Don't speak them out. We're too big a crowd to do it. What would be a couple of qualities of this person who is in the second chair? Just think through in your own life. What would be a couple of qualities that that person should have? Do you have a couple in your mind? Let me give you three. These are just three. The first one is humility. Now, I've done a whole talk in Boca Lead on humility. Humility is not depreciating your value. That is not humility. That's false humility. Humility is truly understanding your value, understanding who you are, and living in that. Now, pride is taking it to a whole nother level. I'm better than you. I know what I'm doing. I don't need anybody else. That's pride. But humility is someone who works their strengths to the full. And you can be humble, have humility. And this is the new, if you're reading any of the new books, the key books, even on the New York Times bestsellers of business, I hope you get those and you start reading some of the New York Times has the top 10 business books every week. They're fantastic, but humility is the new thing. The winning through intimidation, and without being political at all, some of our politicians are choosing to use pride and arrogance as a tool of leadership. I don't know that that's really good. And I'm not, it's not a political statement. It's more a personal statement. I'm not going to make political statements here, but it's a personal statement. I believe humility is a key value in a second position. Number two is motivation. Motivation is important. You have to be motivated to make the place you work a better place. And I'm not just talking about a better place with paint and carpeting and, you know, better snacks in the snack bar. I'm talking about a better place because you're there. And if you were pulled out, it would not be as good a place. That means you're a critical thinker. You're able to help the organization. You bring things to it. And that's an important key aspect. And then the third one is this, smarts. I would put an S on that, smart. You need to learn your craft so well that people will come to you. Now, I have a friend here who I forget where he's sitting because I've been walking all around. He's sitting somewhere here who was a competitor of mine for 25 years. 25 years he was a competitor of mine. He just sold my son a house. I mean, Now, he's on the opposite side because my son's using a family member. Obviously, we're in real estate, so he's using a family member. But he's on the opposite side of the table. When I heard it was him and he heard it was us, it was unbelievable what occurred. The trust was already there. And we were competitors. Never worked for the same nothing. We were competitors. It was an amazing thing going on. But smart, because he's a smart man and he does well, but smarts is important. You've got to know your business and do it well. There is no excuse for mediocrity. I am a firm believer in professionalism, excellence, diligence. There is no room for that. Now, so that's my, these are my list. Let's go to the next slide. It's a subordinate whose influence. So you're not just the person in the food chain, you're a person who has influence. What does that mean? It's a person who has qualities that set them apart in their ability to influence people in situations. That's what I'm talking about. You who sit in that seat have an incredible opportunity because the qualities you have, the ability, one of them is to connect the dots. That's an amazing thing. Do you know what I mean by connect the dots? You know, the little children's things where it's 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's going to look like a lion afterwards? Well, some people look at it and go, it doesn't look like a lion. Well, you're right, it doesn't look like a lion, but it will look like a lion when you connect the dots, right? 1 to 2 to 3, and it's all zigzag, and all of a sudden, you have a lion's face there, and your little child or grandchild or niece or nephew goes, wow, that's a lion. Well, you knew it was a lion before you connected the dots. You connected the dots, and a lot of people do not have the ability to connect the dots between vision, between where we're heading as an organization, where the industry standards are going, what all the things are, and the reality of your business, kind of the footprint of your business. And you, if you can do both, is an unbelievable asset to influence people, and people will come to you even though you may not be in the corner office because they know you can help. So you're a person, a subordinate whose influence, go to the next slide, you have it with others. It's one thing just to say I'm a very influential person, but you have it with other people. That's a person who has meaningful, influential relationships. Now there are people that want to work in windowless, empty offices. I get that. I really don't get that, actually. But there are people who like to work in windowless offices. But even you who like to work by yourself in windowless offices or do your own projects have to interact at some point or another. And when you do, you need to develop meaningful, and I have a whole talk on trust and building trust. When you have built trust, it's an amazing thing. This morning, my daughter, who's in school, was studying Margaret Thatcher's speech, her obituary that she read, or eulogy, I should say, at Ronald Reagan's funeral. Say that three times. Back in 2004, I believe it was. And one of the things she talked about was the influence he was able to have with his enemies. And the ability to turn an enemy into a friend. And specifically, that was Mikhail Gorbachev. And she said these words. She said, he went to him, and she was quoting him, 10 years before that or 15 years before that, when he went to Mikhail and said, we do not trust each other. What are we going to do about it? So even if you don't have a trusting relationship, you got to develop the trusting relationship, because without trust, you have nothing. If you want to be influential, you need to have meaningful, and I would put the word trusting, relationships. I'm only talking business here. I'm not talking husbands and wives. You can certainly apply that here. I'm not talking about other things. I'm talking about business here. And that means people above you, beside you, and below you. I have a firm belief in the equality of people. And I'm not just, that's not a statement of racial, obviously, and gender, obviously, but also in the pecking order of your business. You see, the person who answers your phone, or the person, if you're in retail, who's at the front desk, is seriously just as important, because they're the first line that is reached, right? So that they're only making minimum wage, they're part-time, they're not getting any benefits probably, and they're just as important as the people that are making 5 and 10 and 20 times what she or he is making, or that retired lady who just wants to come in and work 2 afternoons a week at your business. She's just as important as you are. And she can influence people just as you can. I've shared this story very quickly. When I was in real estate, I did commercial real estate, but occasionally I do residential real estate. And Elizabeth, my wife who's here, said, "Bill, you need to sell a house to our friends." I said, "I don't want to sell a house to our friends. Give it to someone else." She said, "No, sell it to our friends." So I had to go out and spend all this time finding these houses. I'm in commercial real estate, but I did it for a friend. Well, you end up making about $1 an hour when those things end up. It's just like, you think realtors make a lot of money? We may make a lot of money, but per hour, it is not much. So I sold him a house, just a little nice little bungalow house. It was great. And that was done. He was a forklift operator in one of the warehouses out in the Arvida Park of Commerce. That's all he was. It was great. But he was a friend. We did it. And I treated him with respect. One day, he's forklifting, whatever forklift operators do in the warehouse, and in comes the president of the Fortune 500 company that this is a subsidiary of, walking through, and they're looking at the inventory and just looking at it. So he stops his forklift and just sits high, you know, they're about this high, sitting up there as the two men are talking, the local branch man and the president, CEO of a Fortune 100 company, actually. And the one guy goes, "You know, you need to expand and you need more space." And the guy says, "I know, I thank you. He goes, "We need about put 5 times as much space that you have here." And he goes, "Do you know a realtor who could show you?" He goes, "No, I don't." And my buddy sitting 8 feet above him says, "I do." And they looked up and said, "Who?" And he gave him my name. It was the biggest deal I did that year. Why? Because I treated everybody equally. And you see, that man had influence on a Fortune 100 president, CEO. It's unbelievable that he would go, "Oh, give him a call," to the branch manager. And he gave me a call, and of course, I was on it like that, and the deal happened. It was an amazing thing. We don't think that the forklift operator or the receptionist, everybody is interconnected. There is a trust that you have to develop. Let's keep going quickly. Number 4. You add value. You have to add value. A person who creates and strengthens these meaningful relationships and serves the leader or the vision, the mission of the organization. It could be a specific person. It could be the vision. It could be whatever. You put the blank in there. I just kind of left this like this. You put what you're serving. And if you're serving that and you're helping these people get to here, you will have influence beyond your means, and people will look at you and go, "I want him or her to be in my group," or to, you know, it's not about the money, it's not about the position, by the way. You all know that. Leadership is not a position. Leadership is not a corner office. Leadership is not, leadership is inside. A leadership is a person. It's not a position. And it goes back to serving. If you're going to be a servant to someone or to the organization itself, it will benefit. And then finally, 5th, throughout the whole organization, you're a person who is committed to seeing the entire team or the entire organization, you put whatever applies to you, to thrive and succeed. You see, if I only want my team to succeed, I only want me to succeed, it's about me and mine, then you're not a leader of influence as a second chair leader. You are a taker. You need to be a giver. You are not just interested in your own little world. And that alone will set you apart. You'll be so set apart from everyone else that people go, "I want to use that person. I want to be a part of his or her team or I want them a part of my team. We'll train them on the particulars. Get that person because they want the whole group to thrive and succeed. And if you do that, it's a beautiful thing. In the middle chair or in the second chair, you can have an incredible influence. See, all of us are trying to get to the first chair. Not all of us, but a lot of us say, I need to be the leader. I need to be, well, the leader can be in any seat you're there. I have this firm belief in that. Now, let's wrap it up. Just kind of bring our thoughts together here on this. I have a good family friend, and in fact, their son right here is Ben, who's right here, the Ross family. Ben is one of the children of a very close friend, Steve and Julie Ross. I grew up with Julie Ross, Steve, who has passed away about 13 years ago, but he was a close friend, met him in college, and a good friend, and they were good friends. They moved to Latin America, Peru. This was back before Skype, before FaceTime, before email was real accessible, or I should say the web was accessible in certain parts of Latin America. So we couldn't communicate. One day, Steve called me. He called me. That's when it was $1.50 a minute, remember? Some of you younger ones go, what are you talking about? I call all my friends everywhere for free, now, right? These older, ask a gray hair. Our phone bills used to be hundreds of dollars a month just calling, right? You know, and so he calls me, and he didn't have a lot of money, right? You guys did not have a lot of money. He's calling me. It was probably $2 a minute. He said, Bill, a good friend of mine, Randy and Kim, great friends of ours, their infant child died in a, drowning, thank you, in a little pond. This infant fell in a pond and died. And I was very moved by that. I was in business. I wasn't a pastor or anything, so I wasn't moved because I'm a pastor. I was just moved by it. He goes, I want you to attend the funeral because I can't come up and attend the funeral. I thought, I haven't heard anything about this. I don't know Randy and Kim. I don't know anything about this. It should be in the newspaper. Something. I mean, a drowning of a one-year-old is usually in the newspaper or somewhere. So I'm thinking, so I said, Steve, is it Fort Lauderdale, West Palm, Miami? He goes, it's in another country. She died in another country, but I can't get there, and I want you to go. I said, Steve, I love you to death, but I'm not going. I don't know these people. I'm not getting on a plane, flying to another country, and going. And he instilled a vision in me. He was a dreamer. He instilled a vision in me. It took him about 10 minutes, about $20. No, seriously. And he said, Bill, this is all I want you to do. He called me Mitch. He said, Mitch, this is what I want you to do. I want you to fly over there. I said, when is it? He goes, tomorrow. Right, okay. Fly over there, drive to their house, knock on their door, and say these words. I am standing here for Steve Ross. That was the vision he instilled in me. I caught the vision. I'm in the second chair. I don't know Randy. I don't know Kim. Of course, we all have compassion for a child who dies, but I had no connection. I caught his vision. I said, I can do that. So I got another buddy of mine and instilled the vision in him and said, we're flying. And so the next morning, we flew to Nassau, Bahamas, got in a car, it's left-hand drive, you know, the whole thing, found the house, I knocked on the door. Up comes Randy, who I've never met, he doesn't know me, and there's no phone connection on all this thing. I stood there and said, I am standing here for Steve Ross. That's all I said. He embraced me as I have never been embraced before. It was unbelievable. And he brought me in and my friend in, and we sat there and we met all the family, the grandparents, et cetera, et cetera. Then we went to the funeral and he said, you're going to sit right next to me. I said, I don't even know you. I'll sit back with the people. It was filled, you know, a little church in Bahamas, filled one of those great little churches there, and it was filled with all the locals. And I said, I'll just sit back in the back. He goes, no, you're here for Steve Ross. He would sit here, you're sitting here. You see, I caught the vision, and I was able to help this man, even though I didn't understand all that was going on. So we went back to the house, did a few more things, got in the car, flew back. I was home by dinner. Seriously, it was that fast, 8 hours. 10 years later, almost to the month, Elizabeth and I lost a child. You know who was knocking at my door? Randy. And he said, I am here for you. You see, I was able to transfer a vision that Steve had given me to him. And when I needed it, he flew over from the Bahamas. Actually, he wasn't in the Bahamas at that time, but came. He now lives in Africa. I mean, my goodness. And knocked on my door and our door. Said, we're here, standing with you. You see, if you catch the vision of the second chair, I believe great things can happen in your company and with you personally, because you are not just thinking of people as projects, automatons, the people that do your work. You really are concerned for them, both up, down, and beside. Let's go out and do that to other people. Thank you.